Michelle, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. And certainly, looking, you're absolutely right at the images of the As One bid representatives and some of the
Matildas.
So nice. It was great. They were all social distancing, and then all of a sudden there was hugs and kisses and cuddles.
It's hard not to. It's really, really exciting. If anything, it's such a huge win for women's sport in Australia. But that's actually completely related to my first question. What does this mean for women's sport for the World Cup to be hosted in Australia and New Zealand?
Look, it truly is, it's a world first. We've got two nations from two different football confederations, so Asia and Oceania, and we're going to host what really is the world game. And you're absolutely right. The opportunities for women's soccer, football, bit of semantics there, we'll definitely call it football, and certainly sort of women's sport more broadly in Australia, both on and off the field. And I think the timeliness of this win is also really significant against the backdrop of COVID-19. There certainly has been some discourse around perhaps women's sport, which has had such a great momentum happening in Australia, might be relegated back to the sidelines. But I think this win really does shine the light back on women's football and women's sport more broadly. And, you know, we're really seeing some interesting traction as it relates to spectatorship and commercial interest in women's sport as well. Australia, there was a recent research undertaken by True North, and the Matildas were voted the number one sports team, Australian sports team, and that was against both men's and women's sport. So we're really seeing an opportunity for us to further that momentum and certainly have some wins off the field as well. Sport in Australia and certainly globally is often a masculine preserve by virtue of its management and leadership. So this can really be another opportunity to forward some of those objectives off the field and see women enter some of those roles, especially as it relates to officiating and coaching as well.
Absolutely. I remember I played soccer for quite a few years, and I remember watching footage of women's football and men's football, and like, look, just my opinion, but also probably backed up by a lot of evidence. The Matildas are so much better. they win so many more games, and so like seeing like. It kind of, well, seeing women's sport, women's football as well, just get snubbed. So wild to me, considering like it's a really amazing team, you know?
Yeah, and I think the other important thing there in respect to what you've just said about, you know, you can't be what you can't see. And I think you're absolutely right. We have had a situation where women, that is female athletes, haven't necessarily got the kudos and the recognition that they absolutely deserve. And you've just mentioned, you know, some of the performances that the Matildas really have reigned supreme. And particularly when you put that against, for example, our men's team, who obviously are doing well as well.
Oh, but, yeah, of course.
Yeah, we won't discount their
achievements.
But I think certainly, yeah, we've had a situation where women's sport hasn't been celebrated as it ought, and that role modelling that can come and the trickle down that can arise as a consequence of you know the professional game, and there's then opportunities for I guess women to sort of see others performing at that level and similarly emulate that success. But equally, as you said, you know the significant traction that the sport is getting at the grassroots level, and that's really where the opportunity lies, and we've got to be really clever at how we leverage off the back of that.
Absolutely. So it's come out recently that the English Football Federation decided to snub Australia and New Zealand's bid. So how exactly does geopolitics come into play here?
Yeah, so certainly the English abandoned any allegiances with us and ANZAC, so they really certainly left us hanging. And as you suggested at the top of the piece, that it was sort of 22-13, and those 13 sort of bids for the Colombian bid, they actually came from what essentially was a UEFA block. And, you know, we've seen, unfortunately, some less than ethical practices in the past. So one of the things with this bid, which is a really significant, I think, achievement, is that it's very transparent. So we now know, as distinct from when Australia bidded for the 2022 Men's Football World Cup, Qatar sort of came out and we got one vote and we invested $50 million. Well, what happens between those two things? Well, we've got a situation here, thankfully, where it is transparent. And as you suggest, the English, they didn't bid in support of the Trans-Tasman as one bid. So, yeah, there's certainly been some interesting aspersions as of late to why that may indeed be the case. And certainly it's been reported in the media that Jacinta Ardern actually tried to speak with the Football Association head prior to the bid, so doing the ring around to shore up our votes. And Greg Clark, he actually declined the New Zealand Prime Minister's phone call. So in terms of the technical report, so Australia was technically far superior than Colombia. So they got 4.1 out of 5 and Colombia got 2.8 out of 5. So it sort of begs the question, on what basis did the English and that block of 8 use to make that decision? And so what they've suggested is that while football in South America is huge, that there's not necessarily the following of the women's game. And so this was an opportunity to shore up the support for women's football in Colombia. And their suggestion was, well, Australia's already got some good traction, as does New Zealand. We're starting to sort of see fans rust onto women's sport, et cetera. So it was a better opportunity strategically for Colombia. But, yeah, it definitely is or does demonstrate some interesting issues as it relates to geopolitics. And, you know, undoubtedly I think they were wanting to obviously keep it in European, South American hands. And we clinched it, thankfully, which is good. Now we just got to win the cup. Wouldn't that be a nice thing to report in 2023?
God, absolutely. And now Brazil's pulled out. They pulled out of the running due to financial concerns. Mm. So is this a viable option considering what we're dealing with at the moment in terms of, you know, coronavirus?
Yeah, and look, this is significant. It's important. And you know, the Football Federation Australia has suggested that Australia hosting the tournament, there's a $460 million social and economic benefit. And I think the important thing to keep in mind is that these are in the projections, their future forward things. So we can't absolutely know. What we do know, I guess, is that thus far the government has spent sort of $5 million on the bid, and as I said, you pit that against our loss to Qatar for 2022. Our government funded in the amount of $50 million just for the bid, so much leaner. We've won that bid, so that's the first tick. The second, I guess, undertaking is that between Australia and New Zealand, there's been aspersions that to run the tournament, it'll be $150 million. So $100 million will come from the joint government, and then $50 million being made up in that full amount. So, yeah, when you look at the cost versus the benefits, certainly on the basis of projections, you know, it's a win. However, as you rightly suggest, lots of these projections were largely pre-COVID-19. So if we look at Canada, when they hosted the Women's World Cup, they had a really huge economic benefit. But one of the things that that benefit was contingent on was inbound tourism. And so one of the issues is obviously whilst pandemic fears and COVID-19 and so forth will hopefully come to some sort of resolution by 2023, will, you know, people, one, have money to travel? Will they, two, have the inclination? So that certainly is problematic. And if we think a little bit about Sydney 2000 and our hosting of those games, the government certainly projected inbound tourist dollars as contributing, being one of the major contributing factors economic benefit. But, you know, we had SARS and we had 9/11. So there are always these kind of external shocks that we need to be really mindful of. But on pure economics, I don't know that we're going to have a massive boost. But as I said, it's economic and the social. And while the social outcomes are far more difficult to kind of quantify, I think that certainly we put those two things together, we are in a good position. But yeah, look, Brazil, Japan, they pulled out at the last minute, and both of them sort of speculated as to, you know, how it might all unfold given the uncertainties that we do know at present.
Absolutely. Well, Michelle, thank you so, so much for joining us on the show today. It's been really awesome talking about this.
Thanks again.